from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll get a preview of the Ballet Theatre of Carmel's production of The Nutcracker.
I'll check out the upcoming Zionsville home tour with music from young performers.
And then I get to chat with the 2013 Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award, National Award winner, Michael Martel. Plus, there'll be that arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Ballet Theatre of Carmel at Performer's Edge is celebrating their fifth year by presenting the complete story of the Nutcracker at Carmel High School in collaboration with some members of the Carmel High School Ambassadors. Travis DiNicola spoke with director Jane Hatchia-Weiner about the show.
Jane, welcome back to Art of the Matter. Great to have you here.
It's a pleasure being here, Travis.
So you are doing a full-length Nutcracker, and this is the first time. This is exciting because it's the fifth birthday for Ballet Theatre of Carmel at Performer's Edge. And so to celebrate that, you're doing a full-length Nutcracker. Good
That's
for you.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you. We're excited as well. The families are excited. We've got about a threefold excitement in that we've moved south down into Carmel High School.
Yeah.
We used to be at the Westfield High School Auditorium, so we have more fly space. And
nice.
We can do the whole production with everything, the growing Christmas tree, the mm-hmm. cannons, everything that an audience would expect, we will be able to provide for you.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about Nutcracker in just a moment, but tell me just a little bit background on Ballet Theatre of Carmel, as I mentioned, in its fifth year. And I know that you work with younger students as well as pre-professional. Tell me a bit about that.
Yes. Ballet Theatre of Carmel at Performer's Edge. Ballet Theatre of Carmel is an educational component of the ballet programs at Performer's Edge Dance Theatre, which is our bigger umbrella school. And at our school, we espouse the American Ballet Theatre National Training Curriculum,
mm-hmm.
which is also somewhat in its youth, but taking great strides in educating young dancers all over this nation and all over the world.
This is a very specific curriculum that you've been trained in to be able to share.
Yes, it mm-hmm. is. It is. It's a curriculum that was developed by Franco DeVita and Raymond Lukens
mm-hmm.
and a board of physicians and physical therapists, and they have spent about 7 years creating this curriculum before it was implemented. And we have two certified teachers at
mm-hmm.
our school. Suzanne DeLay up north also is certified. We have another somewhere in Indiana, I think Erica Fischbach
mm-hmm.
up in South Bend. We are the only affiliated school, however, in that we have been able to successfully present our students for affiliate exams, which means that they are prepared and examined. The teacher is examined.
Mm-hmm.
We're all examined.
And again, that is through American Ballet Theatre. And in fact, I know that you just took a group of your dancers. 15 of them did the national examinations. Tell
well,
me a little bit about
this. Actually, it's the other way around. Mr. DeVita, the author of the curriculum,
came here
to visit us.
Yeah. Right. And that was actually in thanks to the City Ballet, right?
Absolutely. Indianapolis City Ballet,
mm-hmm.
of course, has their ongoing masterclass series. And Franco is a favorite of the dancers here. He's been back several times, and on one of his trips here for
mm-hmm.
his masterclass, which sells out immediately, Indianapolis City Ballet shared him the first day with us so that we could get our exam requirements fulfilled.
That's great.
It was a great result this year.
What does that mean to your students?
Well, you know, what it means to the students is that they get a very concentrated, intense period of preparations.
Mm-hmm.
And learn the confidence to show what they have learned in front of, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know what the analogy would be if you were a med student. It would be the big head honcho of the medical school watch you do the operation, for
okay.
instance.
Yeah.
And so it really is kind of proving to Franco and to myself that they know the material. Of course, the examination in...
It certainly raises the bar for them.
It certainly raises the bar.
Adds that professional credibility.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. They will get their own evaluations. And it really is an examination for myself and that it is examining me to make sure I am teaching the material accurately and correctly. And so we all go under scrutiny. And sometimes, you know, that's a humbling yet growing experience. And it's not necessarily the most comfortable thing.
Sure.
But in the end, it's a high mountain to climb. And we're all glad we did it together and plan to continue doing it to keep ourselves accountable.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank
so, and certainly that work will be shown off when you present the story of the Nutcracker.
Yes.
Saturday, December 14th, both at 2 and 7:30 p.m., as you mentioned, at the Carmel High School Auditorium. We've got a little bit more room. You're also doing something kind of special with this, a stroll through Mother Ginger's Village.
Yes.
What is that?
Yes. You know, we have Clara often... hosts a tea party for other ballet schools, and we thought, gosh darn it, Mother Ginger needs to have her own thing.
Mother Ginger is such a great character.
She's a great lady, and I mean that literally. And, you know, she comes out very high and very tall, and we figured, you know, she probably has a village where she's well known. And so we decided to make this an interactive experience the minute a young audience member walks into the auditorium, that they could go to her village, hear the story of the Nutcracker, do some get into the spirit of the story, and then walk right into the auditorium. We continue telling the story, so we kind of want to set the stage a little early before they walk into the auditorium.
Very nice, very nice.
Very excited.
So who is your Mother Ginger?
This year, once again, it will be our faithful contemporary teacher, Mr. Chris Watson.
Okay.
He is well known at our school and in the Carmel Central Indiana community as a fine contemporary teacher, and he has been our perennial Mother Ginger. And I think we might have a second cast in the works, but for sure we have Mr. Watson.
Very good. Well, tell me more about the rest of your production of The Nutcracker.
Well, As you mentioned earlier, we've kind of backed into the full length. We did second act, and we had the musical theater company help with first act, and then we did a concert piece, and then we backed into the battle scene. So now we're adding the party scene.
Okay.
And one of the lovely things about our party scene this year is that our fearless leader, Mr. Ron Morgan, has talked to and asked the Carmel High School ambassadors to help out.
Now, this is the group of singers, right?
This is the quintessential show choir of Carmel High School. They are award-winning and well-known, and several of their show choir members will be on stage with us in a role. I mean, they're not just coming on to do their gig and leave. They are an integral part of our dancing, and we'll play the parts of the mothers and fathers of our young dancers. And
very nice.
Peeked into rehearsal the other day, and, you know, they are ready made. They're so ready to be on stage. They've learned stage presence already. And Mr. Morgan is doing the choreography.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can see some of his choreography now at Beef and Boards.
Okay.
Les Mis.
Excellent.
So I'm excited to showcase some of our guest artists as well, our own dancers, you know, without... Needless to say, I'm extremely proud of.
And your dancers represent quite a wide variety of schools. I believe I read that over 25 different area schools.
Yes, yes, not just local Carmel high school and middle school students, but all over Central Indiana: Park, Tudor, Orchard, Collegewood, way down over to Fishers, Mount Vernon, Sycamore, Heritage. How far do we go? North Point, Westfield.
So really from all over.
St. Luke, they come from all over. They
Very
come
fun.
From all over to study with us.
Very fun. Well, that's excellent to hear. Now, again, for the stroll through Mother Ginger's Village, that takes place beforehand from 12:30 to 1:30 before the 2 p.m. show,
that
right?
That is correct. It's only an offering for a matinee show.
Okay.
Tickets are limited, so please have people contact early because we want to make it a very interactive experience, so we're not going to, you know, send masses of people in. They'll be trickling in so that each person gets some personal attention by the cast members.
Yeah, they get to make a craft
and do a
little dance themselves and hear a reading of the Nutcracker and
that's right.
Goodie bag and beverage and all that stuff. That's very neat. Now, we're going to mention again in the close of the show, but I know you've got a great parent volunteer who's helping out with tickets.
That's right.
And people can call 353-2329, again, 353-2329, for more ticket and show information. So, Jane, anything else you want to add? Because I know, of course, Nutcracker is a big part of every ballet school's repertoire and what everyone does in December. But you have work that you do all year round, of course.
That's correct. We the ballet programs at Performer's Edge Dance Theater is kind of the core curriculum that, you know, just like Latin and Greek is the core language for other languages, mm-hmm. or Chinese or Arabic. You know, we do ask that all of the dancers, and at Performer's Edge, we have musical theater dancers, we have competition dancers, and we have classical ballet dancers. They are all required to be educated in ballet, mm-hmm. as well as their modern jazz and tap. And so we emphasize that the technique classes are the mainstay of their education, and that we're not going to wash away the technique classes and mm-hmm. fold into rehearsals. And we find that our dancers, having all of their technique classes be their mainstay, they transition beautifully into performing. And so then we can concentrate on acting skills and stage mm-hmm. skills. So we have gotten some great feedback about the fact that Ballet Theatre of Carmel dancers are beautiful actresses and performers on stage. And we are very invested in making this experience believable for the audience,
mm-hmm.
so that they can come and enjoy the real story and believe it and enter the land of magic with us.
Excellent. Well, Jane, thank you so much for coming in to Art of the Matter today, and best of luck, and I wish you continued success.
Thank you. It was a pleasure being here.
Travis DiNicola with the Ballet Theatre of Carmel's Jane Hatchia Weiner. You can get more information about their classes and their upcoming production of The Nutcracker at ballettheatreofcarmel.org. And theater is spelled with an R-E at the end, so ballettheatreofcarmel.org. The production takes place on Saturday, December 14th at Carmel High School's auditorium at both 2 and 7:30 p.m. Again, Saturday, December 14th, Carmel High School Auditorium, 2 and 7:30 p.m. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Imagine touring homes beautifully decorated for the holidays by florists, designers, and homeowners while listening to young singers performing in each house. That's the winning formula that Zionsville High School created for a fundraising event that benefits its show choirs. Sharon Gamble invited tour organizers and choir moms, Jen Luchik and Aaron Leonard, to our studios to learn more.
So, music and beautifully decorated homes sounds like a winning combination. I understand you were both involved last year in cooking up this collaboration. Where did the idea come from? And I'll toss that to whichever of you.
Well, the idea kind of came, Aaron and I were asked to co-chair fundraising, and we had kind of three main goals as fundraisers. One, we wanted the fundraising to involve the kids. We wanted them to take some kind of ownership in whatever activity we did. Two, we wanted kind of a signature event, something that would draw in people and be something we could do year to year. And three, we wanted to involve the community. Our kids, people who come and see them and hear them, just love it. And so we wanted to get the community involved so that we weren't just tapping into our parents for another fundraising opportunity.
Sure. Was it originally intention to be a holiday time fundraiser? Okay.
It was. We just kind of thought of, in Zionsville, they had done home tours previously. Mm-hmm. In previous years, and they'd been very successful. And we thought, well, how could we spin that to involve the kids? And we thought, why not do something at the holidays? You know, people decorate their homes already, and two, the kids could go in and sing, and it'd be great entertainment.
Sure. So, Aaron, tell us about the choral program at Zionsville High School.
Zionsville High School has an award-winning choir program that is just outstanding. Our two directors are Dina Brogy and Aaron Coates, and they come with just unbelievable experience and really challenge our kids to be the best. And they're both the Choral Heirs, which is an all-girls ensemble, and the Royal Heirs is a mixed ensemble with young ladies and young men. They both are award-winning and grand champions over many different times over the last many years under the direction of Dina and Aaron.
You have some great video on the website, too, showing some performance
right.
excerpts.
Yes. I have two daughters that are in the show choir, and Jennifer has a son and a daughter. And when they both, all four of them actually got started, I just could not believe how much they learned within a very short period of time. My oldest daughter has had Irish dance background for many, many years, mm-hmm. Which is obviously a little bit different type of dancing. And my youngest daughter hasn't had any really dance experience. And just within the 3 or 4 months at the beginning of the school year with the choreographers that come in, it is unbelievable how much they learn and really learn to compete and how to work with a large group. So it's really a great opportunity for young kids at Zionsville High School.
So I have to ask both of you, is the television set automatically tuned to Glee at some point every week?
I think definitely my daughter loves Glee, and I think that was kind of one of the things that she really drew her to the show choirs. But I think seeing her older brother involved in it and the bonds that he made with these kids, you know, they always say in high school it's really important for kids to find that niche that they belong
sure.
in. And I think this group is just a great group to have through your high school years. And like Aaron was saying, you know, they learn so much, but not only about music, they learn so much about discipline and just striving to be the best at whatever you're doing.
Probably a lot about teamwork, too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm joking about Glee because it just, as soon as it started airing, and it's been a few years now, but it just became this instant cultural icon that everybody who sang in the choir in high school, like yours truly, glommed onto it. It's like, yes, yes, thank you for making a show that's not just about the athletes.
Right.
Because absolutely.
Although I have to say there's athleticism involved in music, and certainly when you're dancing.
Mm-hmm.
So how did the with the brainstorming, were the kids involved a little bit, and did they say, oh yeah, oh so cool, so we could go house to house, we could sing, or we could have an ensemble here, an ensemble there?
Right. Well, last year, since it was our very first year doing it, there was a lot of different pieces to work out
sure.
with the directors. When you have 90 plus kids in the program, how do you incorporate all of them to be involved in the fundraiser? So Dina and Aaron coordinated with kids. They allowed them to set up their own duets,
aww.
Pick their own music. Some kids have done their own instrumental
that, really?
Or mm-hmm. even their wow. own company, how that piece is going to be played.
Wow.
And it really was a great way to get kids to be creative in their own musical talents and show it wasn't just what the directors wanted.
Mm-hmm.
It was what the kids wanted. We had kids that greeted. If they didn't sing, they were host in the homes. We had kids and parents who make cookies because we have homemade cookies in each of the homes.
Oh my.
for our patrons that come through. And then the really neat part, last year at the end of the day, Jennifer and I were in one home and the kids were kind of just talking about how the day went. And
mm-hmm.
we asked their opinion on what would they suggest for the following year, which was awesome because it really gave us some great ideas of how it was for the kids to be, how their day and their schedule went. And so they gave us ideas that we were able to incorporate for this year to make the event even stronger, not just from the people coming through, but also for the kids who are singing in the homes all day long.
Sure, because that is a long day. It's 10 to 4. So that is it the same ensembles the whole day, or is there a little swapping in and out, I hope?
They're swapping in and out, and they actually will do it so that the kids can also go to different homes,
oh,
too.
Oh, good.
So, because the kids are also, we want to see the homes as well, so they get to switch around.
Sure.
But all day, there will be kids all day in every home.
Wow. Yep. So let's talk about the houses. Are they all in one neighborhood? Are they walkable, or do you get back in your car and you drive a little bit?
You get back in your car. This year, all our homes are in different subdivisions around Zionsville. So we have 6 homes, and of the 6 homes, not a one is a show choir family. They are all people who have just volunteered their homes in the community for us to use. So that's kind of exciting for us, too. And some of them are show choir wannabes, I think. but so you get in your car, you can decide where you want to go. Our ticket booklet has a map of Zionsville in it and shows all the homes on the map. And so it's really easy to get to each of the homes.
So let's talk about recruiting homeowners, because I've been involved in a home tour in my neighborhood. And sometimes it's difficult because people think, tend to be perfectionists. And they think, oh, I can't put my house on the tour. Even if you tell them it's 2 years from now,
right.
They say, oh, I can't do it. I have too many projects
right.
to do. And that's, most home tours are in spring, summer, or fall when it's relatively easy. You know, all mm-hmm. houses look beautiful. But
we actually chose December because Zionsville has a wonderful day called Christmas in the Village. And so we decided that we wanted to pair with them and help bring more people to Zionsville and be part of the community opportunity that day, which is December 7th. And Christmas in the Village is well known. Lots of people come to support the merchants.
Mm-hmm.
The whole downtown is open. So that's why we chose that time of year. As well, it's before the kids' competition season starts. So once the competition season starts in February, they'll have 4 weekends that are completely absorbed where they will go throughout the state for the different competitions. So we really had to kind of sandwich it between some events within their own schedule for the choral program. At the end of the year, we have a large finale at Zionsville High School that showcases all the show choir kids, and that's another one of our fundraisers. So we really couldn't put it between Christmas and spring because then they're doing competition and then they're preparing for finale.
Well, this is so smart because it extends the brand of Christmas in the Village,
mm-hmm.
gives people one more thing to do, or for people who are just attracted to the home tour with live music, which
right.
in itself is pretty unusual, then they can extend their day, go get a couple more people checked off their list. Old homes, new homes, mix?
Kind of a mix this year. Obviously, we're in subdivisions, but we have one home that's in the first platted subdivision in Zionsville. So,
help us out about when was Zionsville established?
Well, this home, I think, is probably over 20 plus years
mm-hmm.
old. Raintree is the name of the neighborhood,
mm-hmm.
and that was the first established subdivision.
Mm-hmm.
But we have homes, we have a home that's across from Traders Point Creamery, and that one's a fairly older home and has just been remodeled and everything inside. So, yeah, I'm pretty excited about that. So kind of a mix this year. And then different decorating styles that people do. And like you said, some were a little concerned when they signed on of, how crazy do I need
Where
to get?
Where will we put the coats?
Exactly. But we really try and stress to the homeowners that, the kids are a big draw. So really, your decorations, whatever you do as a family is fine with us. And we're not stressing for them to go out and spend a lot of money.
No.
Or we just want it to be a warm, homey atmosphere and showcase these kids.
So the kids will some of the kids be performing? I imagine it's going to be different house to house, but will some be performing outside, or is that more weather dependent?
Really weather dependent.
Yeah.
Last year we did have some kids that sang out on a porch. We had a pretty small home in the Village, so they would move out there from time to time when it got pretty busy inside. We had over 200 attendees last year come through the home tour, so we're really hoping to have that many. Or lots more, actually. We'd love to double our numbers. But they kind of congregate wherever the homeowners kind of suggest. A lot have fireplaces, and it's just a great picture spot and looks just very holiday-ish at that.
Any particular holiday tune you're looking forward to hearing this year? sung by these lovely kids?
My youngest daughter is going to do a duet of, maybe I'm misspeaking now. It's another girl that I actually talked to yesterday. They are doing a mix between Silent Night and All Holy Night together, and they've arranged it themselves, Michelle Long and Emily Knorr. So I just saw Michelle yesterday, and she was talking about that, and they both have fabulous voices. So that will be a great one to see. Last year, we had a couple boys that sang a Hawaiian holiday song, which was a lot of fun, two boys, and they made it just hilarious, and everybody wanted to see them sing. So it is fun to see what the kids can come up with. They're not all traditional songs, and they are holiday songs. They don't necessarily have to be Christmas songs. They can be a Hanukkah song or any other type of holiday song that they might want to choose, which I think is really, really nice. And just adding to what Jennifer was saying with the homes, when we had a meeting with the homeowners that had volunteered to come, you know, they're always a little bit apprehensive.
Sure.
But it is really important for Jennifer and I to get together with these people and really stress that it's their comfort level. We don't want them to go out and spend thousands of dollars to decorate their home. We want it to be their home, their style, their traditions that they've had over the years, because we're actually bringing kids in. A lot of family members come through that day. So it's nice when the homeowners showcase what they've done for holiday traditions. We have one homeowner that's lived in many different places, and I think she has 7 or 8 trees that she'll be putting up.
Oh my goodness.
But one of her most precious things that she likes, it's a tradition in the South, and it's called a keepsake wreath. And so it's a wreath that you put together with all sorts of keepsakes on it. So over the years, she has added to this very large artificial wreath, but it has baby booties on it. She and her husband went to the Rose Bowl when Purdue went to the Rose Bowl many years ago, and it has a ticket on there. It has heirlooms from her grandmother, baby announcements, different things that is a tradition that she learned when she lived not in Indiana. And it's wonderful. I got a chance to see it a couple of weeks ago when she was starting to pull out her decorations. And so we really want the homeowners to feel like it is their decorations. They don't have to have someone come in and decorate for them.
Sharon Gamble with Zionsville Carol of Homes organizers, Jen Luchik and Aaron Leonard. The tour takes place December 7th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. The cost is $20 per person, 5 and under free. You can hear groups of Zionsville High School's award-winning Royal Airs and Choral Airs singing festive songs. In fact, we're listening to that right now. Visit zchoirs.com, that's the letter Z, choirs.com, for this and other upcoming events, or you can contact Jennifer Luchik at 317-408-0203. Again, 408-0203.
Tell me if you can. Hey there, Mr. Santa Claus, jolly old St. Nick. Santa, get your action on. Santa, get here quick.
Oh, time the clock is striking 12, and I'm fast asleep. Down the chimney, broad and black, with your pack you'll creep. All the stockings you will find hanging in a row. Mine will be the shortest one, you'll be sure to know.
Hey there, Mr. Santa Claus, jolly old St. Nick. Santa, get your action on. Santa, get here quick. Oh, Johnny wants a pair of skates. Susie wants a sled. Nellie wants a picture book, yellow, blue, and red. Now I think I'll leave to you what to give the rest. Choose for me, dear Santa Claus, you will know the best. Hey there, Mr. Santa Claus, jolly old St. Nick. Santa, get your action on. Santa, get here quick. Yes, on your midnight trip. Yes, Santa, get here quick tonight. Bop, potato, bop.
Oh, my. Oh, Sharon.
It's Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving
it
week.
Is. Happy Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving week.
Happy Thanksgiving to everyone out there. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Sharon.
And to you as well. And to all of our kitties and our other loved ones with two or four legs.
And happy Thanksgiving to those turkeys out there
That's
as well.
That's right, including the ones that were pardoned by the White House.
Gobble,
That's a
gobble.
Nice tradition. Mm-hmm. Gobble, gobble. So we have some things today that will help you burn off pumpkin pie calories on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
What do you have?
Things to be thankful for.
Yeah.
So returning for its second year, the Holiday Home Tour at Fort Benjamin Harrison is offering three officers' quarters, different homes than last year's event, for their public tour, for their holiday sort of showcase thing. So this is very cool. It's located on the Lawton Loof, and the fundraising event is being presented in partnership with Partnerships for Lawrence on Saturday, December 7th from 4 to 7 p.m. And Cohorn Homes is the title sponsor, and you get to check out some great homes as well as enjoy music and carolers and tasty treats and wine and chocolate and all sorts of other cool stuff. You can get more information at lawrenceartcenter.org. Again, lawrenceartcenter.org.
Hey, don't forget this Saturday, November 30th, the Pride of Indie Bands will be holding their 7th annual fundraiser. It's called Time Warp Vegas, baby. And it features 3 hours. Oh, it's just so fun to say. And here, it features 3 hours of big band style jazz music from the Pride of Indie Jazz Ensemble with special guest vocalist Brenda Williams. It's a party as soon as Brenda walks in the door.
That's true. Well
as local singer songwriter Sean Baker. There'll be a silent auction
the
dancing.
The music maker.
Sean Baker, the music maker. Silent auction dancing and a full bar. Go to the bar before you bid on the silent auction or dance. I'm just saying, get things in the right order. This will be happening at the Athenaeum, and it's an all-ages event, so there'll be things for the smaller people in your life to do, so you can, in fact, tow your teenagers along with you if they'll let you. More information is at prideofindy.org, and doors open at 7 o'clock this Saturday.
Very cool. Okay, this is kind of a neat one. Follow along with me here. Sun King Brewing, and who we love, and Stutz Artists Association are looking for participants for Recycled Parts 2. It's a community art show that's going to benefit the Freewheeling Community Bikes, IndyCog, and World Bicycle Relief. This year's artist challenge is to make art with discarded whole bicycles. So the bicycle pickup is on December 6th outside the Raymond James Gallery in the Stutz Building. You do have to register. Artists who want to do this, it's a $40 fee. You can register on Eventbrite. You need to circle for Recycled Parts. You can also contact Heather@sunkingbrewing.com for all questions regarding this. But it's a really cool project that Sun King and Stutz artists are doing and creating artwork out of bicycle parts. So artists, check this one out.
Way fun. Way fun. Hey, Beef and Board's Dinner Theater is presenting its annual celebration of the season of Beef and Board's Christmas. It opens this Friday, and it's on stage through December 23rd, so lots of chances to go up there, have a meal, and get in the holiday spirit. There are several new arrangements this year, an all-new set, and new audio-visual effects, plus several members of the cast of their highly acclaimed production of Les Mis return to the stage to celebrate all things Christmas. Again, that's Beef and Board's Christmas at, surprise, Beef and Board's Dinner Theater.
Well, that's good to know.
Yeah.
Hey, a movie called Chasing Ice. It's a film screening, special free screening of this award-winning documentary that's going to be shown at the Indiana Interchurch Center. That's on 42nd Street. The film documents an acclaimed National Geographic photographer, that's James Balog, and his quest to gather undeniable evidence of climate change through time-lapse photography of retreating glaciers in the Arctic. So it sounds like a pretty neat film, especially if you want to maybe, you know, take an Arctic trip but don't want to get so cold. You can check this out. It's going to be on Wednesday, December 4th from 7 to 10 p.m. again at the Indiana Interchurch Center on 42nd Street.
Hey, we promised you some things to do to burn off calories. Well, anytime you have little kids in tow, you're burning calories, just keeping track of them, right? But in particular, you might want to go to Jolly Days at the Children's Museum of Indianapolis, and you can enjoy such favorites as the Yule Slide, Jingles the Jolly Bear, and Visits with Santa. You can also have outdoor fun indoors in the snow castle and ice fishing holes, and you can warm up your imagination with lots of baking fun in the kitchen and help Santa's reindeer prepare for their flight. That's all going on at the Children's Museum of Indianapolis.
Well, here's a different way to celebrate the holidays with a steampunk twist. The Morris Butler House is offering Victorian and steampunk afternoon teas. So the Morris Butler House, that 19th century home with a very cool tower and brand new paint scheme, is inviting you for tea. Afternoon teas on December 7th feature Victorian holiday traditions and decor, and a traditional English tea menu. On December 14th, the tea menu features, let's just say it's inspired by the steampunk genre. That should be a lot of fun. Teas are at, on the 7th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. and 2 p.m. to 4 p.m., but on the 14th, that one is from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and that one's going to be a pretty neat one because it's going to also include the Circle City Aerodrome, which is Indianapolis's own sort of steampunk group that's going to explain the creative movement that blends steam-powered gadgets and 20th century marvels in the world of Victorian fashion, literature, and art and history, and it should be a really interesting afternoon. The tea's from Tease Me, and you can get more information if you visit Indiana Landmarks, or you can also call 636-5409 to get more information as well about these very cool teas at the Morris Butler, traditional and steampunk.
And if you're in your kitchen putting away Thanksgiving leftovers on Thursday night, yes, he said steampunk,
steampunk. It's a cool like mix of, you know, like Victorian science fiction and
fantasy,
punk and gothic.
Yeah. And if you want to know more about it, you might want to go to that steampunk tea. Hey, have you ever wondered how your childhood toys behave when the toy chest lid is closed? Take a peek inside and find out. You've peaked, I can tell.
I have.
But
they always look so surprised when I open the lid.
What? You were supposed to know. On December 13th, you can get into the naughty side of the holiday spirit with Toy Chest, a burlesque celebration of our favorite toys and the hidden personalities they display when no one is looking. This totally cracks Travis up. This is all going on at the Athenaeum on December 13th. The show begins at 8:30, doors opening to the public at 7:30.
Oh, I so wish I was in town for
and
that.
And it includes right. Oh, I'm sorry. But we'll all have to go and give you a report. It includes some of the best performers, burlesque performers currently lighting up the stages of Indianapolis, Bloomington, and festivals across the Midwest. It's brought to you by DeLuise Productions. I think this is not an all-ages event.
No,
I think this might be for grown-ups because you're going to watch your favorite classic toy characters climb out of the box and onto the stage.
Very cool. Hey, Sharon, last thing real quick that we have time for. Basile Walrab's Jazz Orchestra Holiday Show is going to be on Sunday, the 15th of December at, of course, the Jazz Kitchen. Their annual show with Everett Green and so many other great musicians is always fun. I know I always see you there.
Indeed. And I have something at the Jazz Kitchen, too, the Sunset Stomp Jazz Band. If you can't wait until that late in the month, they're going to be at the kitchen on Tuesday, December 3rd from 7 to 10. $10 tickets for Sunset Stomp Jazz Band. Wear your dancing shoes.
Very good. And we'll be back next week with more things to be thankful for on that calendar we call
What Will We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Author Michael Martone was born in Fort Wayne, attended Butler University, and graduated from IU. Currently, he teaches writing at the University of Alabama. He's known as a bit of a trickster in the writing world, freely mixing fact and fiction, playing with genres, and giving whole new meaning to what an autobiography can be. And he recently won the 2013 Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award National Award. Travis DiNicola spoke with Martone and with Laura Wills from the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation when Martone was in town last month to accept his award.
Laura, Michael, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. Laura, let's start with you and get a little background on the Indiana Author Awards. This is the fifth year, is that right?
That's right. The Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana Authors Award is a statewide program that seeks to recognize the best of Indiana authors. We begin with a public nomination process in the spring, and then our award panel through the summer reads the huge selection of those works by Indiana authors and then selects a national author winner, which this year is Michael Martone, our regional author winner this year is James H. Madison, and three emerging author finalists, Tricia Fields, Mike Mullen, and Kelsey Timmerman. The winner will be announced at our award dinner on October 26th.
Right. And so we're actually recording this right before that. So that's kind of a big surprise, but we'll be airing it afterwards. So by then we'll know who the that author, that winner is as well. And you've honored some great authors in the past. I know James Tom, Dan Wakefield, John Green. I mean, a lot of just fantastic authors that have been honored through this program.
Right. I think one thing that surprises people is just how many Indiana authors are best-selling, out there doing great things. So that's one thing that we try to bring to people's attention with this program is the breadth and depth of Indiana authors.
Now, of course, it is the Gina Marilyn Glick Award, and what's sad is that they have both passed recently. And but I know that they were just such great supporters of course, the Library Foundation and the awards, and of literature in Indiana.
They were, and we just feel very honored that we could bring this program, which was a vision of theirs, to life and continue on their legacy.
Excellent. Very good. Well, it's a great weekend. I know, along with the big award dinner, there's also the big authors fair and many other events that are tied to this that the Library Foundation has been running for years.
Right. We have free public programs at Central Library that day, so for aspiring writers and book lovers of all ages.
Excellent. Michael Martone, Mr. Martone, it is great to meet you.
Great to meet you.
Thank you. It's I'm really intrigued by your work, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. But just a little background: you born in Fort Wayne, is that
born right? in Fort Wayne,
and went to Butler, graduated from IU, and so certainly have a lot of Indiana roots here as
Never
well.
Never left the state until I went to graduate school.
Really?
Yeah.
So what does it mean to you to be honored in this way? I mean, was it like you know, when they call you up to get the Nobel Award or whatever, and you're like, oh, I can't believe it's really true?
Almost. Like
almost.
That. Well, sure. You labor out alone pretty much when you're a writer, and it's nice to know, you know, you send a book out. It's not like a play or orchestra where you can hear the applause or the reception, and it's nice to know that all the work has found something, has found home. So,
and you still make it back here quite a bit to Indiana.
Every year I come back the first week in October and do the annual Double Wide World Tour of Indiana, where I travel around the state, sort of like Johnny Appleseed from Fort Wayne, you know, just not bringing hard cider, but at least some poetry and some other kinds of writing.
And traveling usually from University of Alabama, where
That's
you're
where
currently
I am now.
A teacher. Yes, professor there. So your work has one of the things that you're known for are these sort of false biographies, fictional nonfiction books or nonfiction fiction, I'm not sure how to put it. One that really intrigues me is your guide to Indiana.
The Blue Guide.
The Blue Guide, which is not a blue guide, but it is your blue guide. Tell me a bit about that.
Well, I think the underlying joke of it is that nobody tours Indiana, not even people in Indiana tour Indiana. And I was saying earlier that what I did was I would write these fake things to do, interesting things to do in Indiana, and instead of publishing them in literary magazines or serious journals, I would publish them in newspapers and magazines here in the state as actual things to do. And the book itself was designed not to be put into the fiction section, but to be put into the travel section, so it would stay in the bookstores longer. And that response is sort of that response. I think my work, or what I try to do with the fake biographies and all of that, is really a kind of confusion of categories, to put an audience or the reader in a kind of state of head-scratching wonder. And if it works, I hope it works sometimes, it is about delight and amusement. And I think the audience, or I want the audience to come away from it thinking there's a space for possibilities. It's not that different than a lot of what predecessors like Kurt Vonnegut did. I mean, both it's a both serious work, but it also is serious through a kind of delight and amusement.
You are certainly a prankster in some of the work that you do. And I was reading some interviews that you've given. I couldn't, in some cases, wasn't sure if they were real interviews or not.
No,
but
there are plenty of non-real interviews out there. So.
So I'm glad to be doing a real interview with you right
That's
now.
That's right.
I mean,
really
as far
here.
As we both know, it is a real one. Is it true you actually published a book that essentially had the same words but published one version as prose and one as poetry?
That, I think, is from a fake interview.
Excellent.
But it's
okay.
close. It's close to the type of thing that I've done. One of the things I did that is connected to Indianapolis has to do with finding out about Heinrich Schliemann. Do you know Heinrich Schliemann?
No, I don't.
He was the discoverer of Troy. He was a rich businessman from Germany, and he really believed that Troy was a real history story.
Mm-hmm.
And so he discovered that, in fact, there was a real place called Troy. But then, and here's the crazy part, he wanted to get a divorce from his Russian wife and marry a Greek woman. He was so enamored with Greek history. And at the time, the place to go for the divorce was Indiana in 1870. This was
the pre-Vegas.
Las Vegas. Yes, this was the Las Vegas of Victorian America. And it took a month, though. That was a quickie divorce. And he bought property here, and he kept a journal of Schliemann in Indianapolis. And that journal survived, and Eli Lilly, actually, who loved the Greeks and all things Greeks, edited it and put it into a book called Schliemann in Indiana. And I found that book, and so I just did a few touches, like discovering some sort of archaeology, and then put that out as a story called Schliemann in Indianapolis. And I think it's the only book I think I ever took out of the library, this Eli Lilly edition, that I don't think I returned. I shouldn't probably admit that now.
Oh, no, no one's going to hear that, right?
Yeah, Irwin Library probably still has me on their rolls. So that is actually a story.
The Library Foundation's not going to share that either, right?
Won't. There's a statute of limitation. So that's a story, or at least one story, that I didn't officially write, but more I arranged.
Okay.
I'm much more interested in context, publishing those blue guide things in magazines and newspapers, or doing a book that's filled with contributors' notes instead of a book that has one contributor's note.
Tell me a bit about your two most recent works, 5 for 10 cents and 50 for a nickel.
Oh. Again, not real.
Not real.
My students constantly attack Google and the wiki page.
The whole story of you and the fist fight with Thomas Pynchon—that's also not true.
That's not
okay, just
true.
Check it. Okay,
that's
well,
not true at all. Or at least I'll not fess up to it here.
So, for the record, at least for this broadcast, what is your most recent book?
Well, see, it's actually 4 for a quarter.
Okay, 4 for a quarter.
Which is based on the old photo booth. So there are 44 stories, all based on various fours. The four seasons, the four chambers of the heart, the four winds, the Fab Four, the four railroads on the Monopoly board. And they're mainly lyrical. It's not that they tell stories, but they create, I think, or I hope, interesting kind of environments. Again, knocking the reader off balance.
Sure.
Haven't thought about this particular way of looking at the world.
You mentioned Vonnegut earlier. He was a big influence on you?
Oh, a terrific influence, and I was happy to have met him a couple of times. And in fact, I'm working on an essay now about his essay at the beginning of Slaughterhouse-Five, and how amazing that essay is, and how amazing it is to have an essay within a novel about the novel you're about to read. I think it's just a very interesting piece of writing.
It's a really interesting way of mixing, as you said, sort of expectations and genres, and you know, keeping the reader just slightly off balance, but also forces them to maybe sort of re-examine some of their own notions about what it is they're reading.
You know, I'm going to talk about this, I think, at the dinner, but, you know, we live in the crossroads of America. We're very proud of the crossroads. But the crossroads is the place where you can find the trickster. And the trickster's job, the artist is trickster, is really to take the things that we feel that we know, that is set in stone. And you can rearrange them in a way that all of a sudden you never thought about before. So we know what cats and dogs are. We know what rain is. But it takes a trickster artist to put those two things together, and all of a sudden it's raining hard.
Mm-hmm.
There's a kind of magic to that, I think. And I think Vonnegut was very good at that, at taking the things that we think are stable and in place, but all of a sudden, well, as he says, we come unstuck.
Laura, let me go back to you just for a moment here and ask you, as the committee, the reviewers, were looking at different great authors and trying to decide who to honor this year, what was it that led you to Michael Martone?
Well, I think he's had a long and distinguished career, and I think the fact that he always writes about Indiana was very appealing to our panel, and mm-hmm. the fact that he has a very unique voice, but always kind of brings it back to home. I think our award panel really appreciated that.
Ms. Martone, I'm curious, how do you describe Indiana to your students down in Alabama?
How do I describe it? A state of mind. Well, it's interesting in Alabama because the students who are from Alabama will say, you know, I'm going to write about Alabama. And everybody else says, well, sure, why not? Mm-hmm. Because the assumption is that Alabama is a place to write about. Got plenty of writers down there. I think what I try to explain to them and then also to people here is if you say you're going to write about Indiana, chances are your neighbors are going to say, well, why? and I think that's an interesting state of mind to be a Hoosier, to actually think that perhaps, you know, there's just nothing here. And it's that nothing that so interests me. You know, the flatness of the landscape, the sort of middleness of the place, that to me is a great challenge to actually try to display it for its unique and amazing properties that we are sort of blind to.
Well, congratulations, sir, on your award, being an Indiana Author Award winner. That is a great honor.
Yeah,
and thank you for coming in to Art of the Matter today. And Laura Wills, thank you as well.
Thank you.
Travis DiNicola with Indiana Author National Award winner Michael Martone and Laura Wills from the Indianapolis Public Library Foundation. Martone's books are available at local bookstores.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m. when I'll preview A Year with Frog and Toad at the Actors Theater of Indiana.
I'll take a look at the Indiana School of Ballet's production of The Nutcracker.
What? Another Nutcracker?
Another Nutcracker!
And I'll learn the secret to perfect pie crust from the author of the Hoosier Mama Book of Pies. Plus, there'll be our calendar of events we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.